And welcome to the FT Advisor podcast, the weekly podcast series brought to you by FT Advisor. Each week, we pick a topic to discuss, and this week, we'll be talking about one that is extremely topical, and that is fees. Last week, St. James's Place announced it was scrapping exit fees for the majority of new investment bonds and pensions as part of an overhaul of its charging structure. The firm said there would be a revised charging structure for new investment bonds and pensions, which will operate with an initial charge and ongoing charges, but without any early withdrawal charges. In addition, charges across all its wrappers, which have historically been disclosed primarily on an all-inclusive basis, will be separated into specific parts. It's no surprise that the FTSE 100 company has been often scrutinised for its fees, so this was largely welcomed by the industry when it was announced. But many had questions asking why now. In today's podcast, we'll be talking about what has been driving the change in the market and what we can expect to see across the industry. I'm Sonia Raach, Deputy News Editor at FT Advisor, and joining me today is Matthew Connell, Director of Policy and Public Affairs at the Chartered Insurance Institute, and Alison Gay, Senior Public Affairs Consultant at the Landcap. Good morning, both. Thank you for joining me today.
Morning.
So perhaps, Matthew, we can start with you and kind of understand a bit about your thoughts on the move by SJP. What do you think prompted the decision and kind of generally in the industry?
Sure. So the Personal Finance Society obviously is a member organisation. Members are individual members. So it wouldn't be right for me to comment in detail on one specific firm. Every firm has its own business models, its own costs, its own services, and it has to assess what the right level of fees are in that environment. And I think certainly, you know, for us, at the PFS, we can talk a lot about regulation, but actually behind regulation is the fundamental thing that all markets have to have, which is trust with clients. And so I think when firms make a course correction on policy issues, on the kind of products they provide, all the elements of good value, it's not surprising that firms do make changes from time to time, because no market can exist without a basic level of trust between client and the financial services firm that they're dealing with. And you know, over time, you know, it's important that financial services firms demonstrate that although they may have an advantage in terms of the imbalance of information and expertise between individual clients and the firms, it's important that firms are taking the initiative as professionals and managing that before it becomes a reputational issue. So it's no surprise, I think, you know, we probably look back and see that lots of different firms have reviewed charges and changed charges simply because, you know, they want to have that trusted position in the marketplace. And of course, you know, more recently, that expectation that firms do the right thing in terms of professionalism has been reinforced by the Consumer Duty and the expectations in the Consumer Duty around fair value and customer support, which includes, you know, giving clients the opportunity to move from one investment to the other. But what I'd say is that the Consumer Duty is really a reflection of an ongoing relationship on changing expectations in the market and that fundamental professional need to retain trust.
Sure. Yeah. No, I think that that kind of is echoes sort of some of the views that we received from kind of on the back of it. Alison, did you kind of have anything to add to that?
Yeah. I mean, this is the first really high profile example of Consumer Duty starting to bite. And all four outcomes, good consumer outcomes that Consumer Duty is supposed to result in, have something to do with fees. So the very first example of a success measure that the FCA is going to use, that they gave when they produced the policy statement, is monitoring FOS final decisions on complaints about fees. So they were very much front and centre about the fact that this was what they were going to be looking at. So all four outcomes, so price and value, obviously, you have to be charging something sensible, and it has to be obvious, it has to be justifiable. There's also some stuff in there about the design of products and services, particularly they talk about behavioural biases. So people tend not to be so worried about things they're going to have to pay in the future. So if there's some sort of fee at the end of the process or some sort of exit fee, people tend not to be so worried about that. So that's how firms can get away with charging exit fees where they might not be able to charge other fees up front. So anything in that space is also relevant. And consumer understanding. Do people understand what fees they're paying? And that's, you know, possibly the most important one of all.
Sure. And when it comes to, I guess, pricing in general in the industry, what are your thoughts on that? Kind of obviously Consumer Duty has a role to play, but kind of the wider view.
Yeah, I mean, it is an interesting one, because with Consumer Duty, a lot of firms say, well, we've been doing the right thing all along. We're not going to change our pricing structures because, you know, all our customers understand what they're paying. But I'm not sure that that's necessarily true. And I'm not sure that firms have got the evidence to prove that. So I think it's firms producing evidence that's going to be as important as actually possibly changing the pricing structure.
Sure. And Matthew, would you kind of say the same sort of thing, or how do your kind of views vary? Because I guess your members are a little bit different in the fact that it isn't the kind of big firms. So...
Absolutely, yeah, and I think it is a fascinating subject and a really complex one. I think Alison's absolutely right. It is very difficult to get a situation where 100% of consumers across the market know exactly how much they're paying in fees. I must admit, when I go around the supermarket, I probably couldn't tell you exactly what every single thing in the trolley costs, because people don't want to think about fees. The attitude is, you know, if I'm getting a good outcome, if I'm getting a good result for my investments, and you know, I can see that year on year, and you know, advisors sort of say, you know, kind of, there aren't many financial services professionals who have to sit across the table with all the clients every year to assess how things are gone. So there is a big element of accountability in that overall. But yeah, when you do a survey of people and ask them, do you know exactly how much they're paying, I don't know, for milk, let alone for financial services, that's a difficult one to bottom out. And then equally, in terms of the benefits, you know, you don't always get all the benefits of financial advice within a neat 12-month period. So, you know, the enormous benefit that's been measured and accounted for in terms of the ability of advisors to persuade clients not to desert the market in a downturn, and then buy back in when prices are much higher. That benefit doesn't come around every year, because you don't get a big market downturn every year. So I think the issue is, what we should be aiming for is to account for all the benefits, you know, over the lifetime of a client relationship, and demonstrate the value of those benefits, and then on an ongoing basis show how for different groups of clients, and in particular vulnerable clients, what the firm is doing to explain what the charges are, what level of understanding there is, and what plan the firms have to improve that level of understanding. But I think it's always going to be an element of continuous improvement, rather than, you know, kind of climbing to the top of the mountain, sticking your flag in there and saying, you know, never need to do any more work on this.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess that's exactly what the Consumer Duty is setting out to do, isn't it, to make those changes. So kind of sticking with that, what do you think the impact of, you know, the duty is going to be on kind of the fees specifically and kind of pricing specifically on firms, and kind of how they implement this? I mean, obviously, I know you said it'll be continuous, but kind of what can we expect to see from, I guess, a consumer point of view, but also just an industry point of view.
Yeah, and I think it's the thought that goes into the fee structure. And again, you know, it's important to remember the FCA hasn't said that the fee structure has to be right on the level of every individual client. But what it expects from firms is to look at how they segment their client base, what kind of different target markets they have, how they factor elements of vulnerability into that. And so I think what we'll see is a lot of thought and reflection and activity around that, really understanding different types of client and whether that segmentation is right and evolving towards an ever more sophisticated understanding, and then developing pricing that's appropriate to every target client. I'm not sure if it's possible to have a kind of broad brush view of whether fees are going up or down, because there are some elements that are, you know, like regulation itself, that have increased costs for advisors over the years. So for example, you know, kind of costs of FSCS levies. Mm-hmm. The FCA is working hard to get those down and reduce costs for well-run firms that have very, very few complaints and aren't ever going to rely on the FSCS. So there are elements in costs, including regulatory costs, that are going to go up, and you'd expect in a competitive market for fees to reflect all those different costs. So I don't think you can have a really kind of simplistic view of consumer duties going in, so people will pay less. But I think you can expect firms to have ever more detailed and evidence based explanation for why they're constructing their fee structures for different segments of the portfolio.
Yeah, no, that makes sense, and I think you know, obviously with the consumer duty, it's the kind of one thing that I found when I was talking to advisors was the price value, kind of the evidence of price versus value, was one of the more difficult things to prove, because, you know, value can be very subjective and it's difficult to kind of monetize almost.
Yes.
But, you know, at the same time, I guess it's one of the things, this is one of the first examples we've kind of seen with a large profile, like Alison said, and kind of having this impact. And RDR, I guess, was one of the things that moved, kind of changed the industry quite a lot. So, Alison, I don't know what your thoughts are on this. I mean, what do you think that the consumer duty is obviously going to be the kind of next thing, like RDR, to transform it? And is fees going to be the kind of thing that stands out when we're talking about this in 10 years' time, or is it going to be something else?
And I think there's a couple of things to unpick there. One is that it's consumer duty is really not RDR2, because apart from anything else, it covers the entire financial services industry. So it's not just one particular sector. So it's every industry. So I think it's even getting a bit of cut through away from the trade press into actual, you know, normal people talk. So people are actually understanding that firms have some sort of obligation towards them. Mm-hmm. So I think that's quite important. So it's also embedded in absolutely everything the FCA is doing. So every time you see a policy statement or a consultation paper or a discussion paper, it references how this reflects back on consumer duty. So I think this is pretty heavily embedded on everything that they're doing. I think also what you were touching on earlier about fees for sort of intangible services this is going to be really interesting, and I really have no answers as to exactly how this is going to work. But the whole idea that you take on a financial advisor to give you some comfort in managing your finances, as well as doing the transactional stuff, and how people are charging for and justifying what they're charging for that is going to be really interesting in the future, because you might be paying somebody quite a lot of money to do nothing at all, and that might be exactly the right thing for you. But how you explain that to the FCA might be quite complex.
that can be a tricky one.
And the customer might be perfectly happy about it as well.
I know you said obviously the consumer duty is obviously moving away from it's kind of not RDR point two, because it is kind of more mainstream as opposed to kind of just trade. But there is this argument that I think people have had that, you know, consumers aren't even aware of the consumer duty. They don't know. They don't, you know, there isn't, hasn't been enough for them to actually know what they are getting and what firms are doing in order to provide kind of fair value and kind of all the other outcomes that the FCA requires. I mean, is that something you would agree with?
Yeah. I mean, in a way, they don't have to, as long as it's working under the surface, because it's people like yourselves. It's journalists have now got a tool to beat firms with if they feel that they're not being very consumer duty, mm-hmm. as the phrase goes. So it's out there. But consumers will, I think, begin to understand it. And there's quite an interesting point that I haven't seen much discussed, is that what consumers don't have at the moment is a private right of action. So they can't take firms to court for breaching consumer duty. But this was suggested somewhere along the line. The FCA decided not to go ahead with this, but has kept it in the background and said that, well, if a consumer duty, we think it's not working, we may bring in a private right of action. And this was enormously unpopular with the industry for all sorts of practical reasons.
Of course. So that's
something to be aware of in the future.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can imagine it was widely unwelcomed. For sure. What are your thoughts on that, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the right of action, to be honest, when we were working on the consultations, a lot of legal experts, financial services experts were scratching their head a bit, because there are elements of rights of action under current legislation, under unfair contract terms and things like that. And of course, there's the informal route of the ombudsman, which is designed to be far more user friendly for consumers, mm-hmm. than the courts. So although the right of action was symbolically very important, I think what's more important, like Alison was just saying, it, you know, consumer duty has become an adjective that maybe replaces professional ethics for a while.
Yeah.
You know, that's not very consumer duty. And so I think in a way that's been the power of the consumer duty, is it's kind of a bit like when GDPR came in, it reminded everyone of the importance of good data management. I think when consumer duty coming in, it's reinforcing what should be there already in terms of sound professional ethics. But it's doing so in a way that's current and gets everyone talking and thinking, which is a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. And kind of just finally, we've seen kind of SJP being one of the bigger firms that has taken this move and kind of do it. Are we likely to see many other companies to kind of follow suit in the way that they have and make potentially similar changes or kind of follow kind of the same path?
Well, I guess every business has a different business model, so every business will need to look at it differently. I think the expectation of the FCA is over time to see some course corrections. You know, if the consumer duty comes in and every firm in the market says, "Oh, you know, no change whatsoever. We're just going to carry on indefinitely the way we were before the consumer duty came in," that will be increasingly difficult for regulators to find plausible. Nevertheless, I think what the kind of course corrections that might be a kind of more granular definition of the different target markets within a firm, mm-hmm. Slightly different treatment of one target market versus other target markets. So I don't think it's necessarily going to be a really dramatic change. But what I think is being looked for from firms is just this constant process of refining their understanding of the situation. And also, you know, kind of joining the dots. We saw some criticism from the FCA for fund managers for gathering lots of market information, but then not really seeming to make enough course corrections on the back of that market information. And I think that's what the FCA will be looking for, to that continuous process of you discovered this new information, you analysed it, and then what did you do to refine the proposition and then monitor what you'd done in refining the proposition. And that's a sort of circle of continuous improvement which the FCA has already established for vulnerable customers, and so in a way that's the next stage is to bring it in with the Consumer Duty.
Yeah, sure, that makes sense. And Alison, did you have anything to kind of add to that?
I think where it's going to be quite interesting, but possibly not so visible, is when firms are developing new products and services. So they've looked at all the products and services that they have, or they should have done at least, ongoing at the moment to see if they're in line with the duty. But when they're developing them in the future, hopefully they'll be making sure that everything, you know, everything is designed in line with it, that the people are being charged fair amounts, and you know, which isn't to say that everybody's being charged the same, which I think is an important point. I mean, you can charge different amounts, mm-hmm. As long as you can justify it. It doesn't have to be a flat fee. But I think the market will generally evolve towards a more consumer duty compliant structure.
Yeah, and I think having seen kind of the kind of bigger firm take like SJP take this move, it will sort of potentially encourage others to kind of follow suit. So we'll have to wait and see about that. But unfortunately, that's all we've kind of got time for today. So I just want to thank you both for coming on to discuss such an important topic. And of course, thank you to all of those who are listening. Join us next week as we discuss another hot topic in the financial services industry.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com.